Good evening and welcome to Outsources. I'm your host, Karen Rayforth, and this evening we're honored to have attorney Jean Dubosky, former member of the Colorado Supreme Court. You may be familiar with her name as the lead attorney who successfully argued against Amendment 2 to the United States Supreme Court. And we have a return of our occasional Outsources contributor, psychologist Glenda Russell, who researched Amendment 2's impact on us as well as other psychological issues on LGBTQ people. They're both here today to help us understand Creative 303 versus Alanis, which just got decided by the Supreme Court of the United States. Welcome, Jean.
Thank you.
And Glenda.
Thanks, Karen, for that introduction. It is a pleasure to be here, and indeed it's an honor to be in the studio with Jean Dubosky, who, as Karen mentioned, has a formidable history as an appellate attorney and a Colorado Supreme Court justice. 303 Creative got decided last Friday, or at least we got the decision last Friday. Everybody's running around a little bit confused, Jean. What does 303 Creative v. Alanis mean for LGBT people in Colorado?
It can be viewed as a first step, perhaps, toward limiting the protection for the LGBTQ community that has been available for a long time under Colorado's public accommodations law. That means that people in a variety of different groups cannot be discriminated against by businesses that serve the public in the provision of goods and services. So when you go to the grocery store or when you go into a restaurant, those are public businesses that are governed by state law, and they cannot discriminate. This decision was a very narrow decision. It was really, as I said, at most only a first step if the court would continue to go down that road, and I'm not sure it will. It was using what many states have as a creative exemption from coverage by public accommodations laws. And the reason for that is that a creative artist or a creative writer is protected by the First Amendment's speech clause. And under that clause, you cannot be compelled to speak if you don't want to. The First Amendment Free Speech Clause is what allows us to speak freely whatever our views are. We will not be subject to punishment by the government if we say something that the government does not like. It's what differentiates our country from authoritarian dictators, such as the kind of punishment being dished out in Russia now. So many people consider the free speech clause of the First Amendment to be the most significant provision in our Constitution. And this case involved a conflict between the First Amendment's free speech clause and Colorado's public accommodations law. And we need to remember that the public accommodations law protects more than just the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm. What you're saying is that by creating this very narrow ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court has said that only in certain really circumscribed cases of public accommodations can a business discriminate.
Yes, and it helps to remember what the facts of this case were. It was brought by a website designer. And it was to get an opinion from the court as to whether she could be compelled to provide websites for gay marriage. She wanted to go into the business of providing wedding websites. But because she is a conservative Christian, she did not want to provide those websites for gay marriage. The court said that providing a website, access to the internet, is speech, and that she cannot be compelled to say something that she doesn't want to say. So, in this very narrow case, the public accommodations law would protect her. It doesn't mean that the free speech clause would apply to all kinds of wedding services even. And it certainly doesn't mean that it would apply to ordinary businesses providing goods or services in the general marketplace.
Jean, there's a question I have that there's so much coverage about a guy named Stuart. And it's a reference to a piece of paper about somebody named Stuart who apparently contacted Lori Smith, the plaintiff in the 303 case, inquired about the possibility of her doing a website design for a marriage between him and his partner, Mike. Would you like to comment on that? Because apparently Stuart's actually a straight guy who lives with a wife of many years and has a child and stuff like that.
Past Supreme Court cases both define speech and provide a procedure for challenging a limit on speech before the limit is enforced. So, for those who think that the Supreme Court has no business listening to a hypothetical case brought before the woman has even begun designing wedding websites of any sort, that is a concern, of course. You are always concerned about hypothetical rulings. But in the free speech context, the court has been so concerned about protecting free speech that it has provided a procedure for challenging a potential limit on speech before the limit is enforced. And here, the Alliance for Defending Freedom knew very well about those cases and knew that they could bring a pre-enforcement case because the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, which came out of Colorado and went to the U.S. Supreme Court, involved a sanction against the baker of that case by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. So this case was brought against a woman named Aubrey Ellenis, who is the executive director of the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, and the attorney for 303 Creative could present to the court the fact that 303 Creative's website designer had a legitimate concern about being sanctioned if she did this wedding website but didn't make it available for gay marriage before she got a ruling from the court on whether the public accommodations law would be used against her.
Thank you for clarifying that. For LGBTQ people who go to other places that provide services to the public, they should not be expecting to be told that they are now legally privileged to refuse services.
They should not.
And what happens if they do say that?
Depends upon the context, but I think it's important to say to the proprietor of the business, I'm sorry, but you're still required to provide services to everyone in the public. And then, being polite, you turn and leave. But what's important is if you're with someone or there was a witness to that, get their contact information. And then as soon as you get to a place where you can write down what happened, write down the time, the name of the business, the date, and what you were told. Don't even tell this to anyone before you write it down, because that's the best protection you can have. Then you can file a complaint with the state Civil Rights Commission. The Civil Rights Commission will follow up on a complaint, at least if they have the resources to do so. They'll contact the business and basically say you're not supposed to be doing that. That's why the State Civil Rights Commission was the defendant in this case. It's because the State Civil Rights Commission had handled a complaint in the past against the designer of a wedding cake, and that designer said he would not provide his service for a gay wedding. And when the courts ruled against him, the Civil Rights Commission sanctioned him.
So this, as much as this doesn't feel good to people, this does not eradicate all of the public accommodations protections that gender and sexual minority people have in the state of Colorado. it does not mean anything like what, say, Amendment 2 meant, which could have been basically discrimination across the board is legal. This says you still have all the, we LGBTQ people still have all the legal recourses except in this very circumscribed area of a certain kind of expressive speech.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. But the decision was broader in one sense because it applies to racial and ethnic minorities. It applies to blacks. It applies to Jews. It applies to women and a number of other protected categories because all of those categories are enumerated in the state's public accommodations law as being protected from discrimination in the provision of public goods and services.
I guess this fits with what President Biden expressed when he indicated his concern about a possible, I think he used the word, trickle-down effect on other groups. This might be a nice opportunity for some good coalition building among different groups who have encountered discrimination of various sorts.
That's right. And those groups should be alert and expect perhaps some more discrimination. Now, it won't be probably as quickly picked up on by the general public as discrimination against the LGBTQ community, but it is something that certainly can happen. And there will be groups who are just looking for any reason to discriminate.
In the majority opinion in the case, Justice Gorsuch, from Boulder.
Yes.
Yeah. Relies on the free speech argument made by the plaintiffs.
Yes.
When the Supreme Court agreed to take the case, they explicitly refused to address it as a religious freedom question and agreed only to hear it as a free speech question. And I think you've indicated that's because free speech is so sort of fundamentally important.
Yes. And if it's religious speech, it is entitled to the same type of high protection that the free speech clause provides. If you bring a case only under the religious liberty clause, you will have the scope of whatever the state action is, here the public accommodations law, reviewed to see if it is something that has a compelling need, and then you'll have it reviewed as to whether it's applied in a neutral manner, and you'll have it reviewed as to whether it's a significant restriction on religious liberty. And by the time you get through all of that, often the person who is discriminated against will prevail. So that's why the free speech clause is important, and it's why this case was framed in the way it was.
At the same time, as people are talking about it, they're talking a lot about religion. Here's a quote from a New York Times article, for example, that said, "The case, though framed as a clash between free speech and gay rights, was the latest in a series of decisions in favor of religious people and groups, notably conservative Christians."
Absolutely. The court seems to be bound and determined to provide as close to absolute protection for religious liberty, which means religions can basically do whatever they want and religious people can do whatever they want. It reflects the composition of the court. You have some members for whom that has been the most important issue. There's 6 Catholics, maybe 7, on the court now. Not all of them are conservative, but several of them were chosen specifically because they cared strongly about religious liberty.
Mm-hmm. And so this is an ongoing theme, and we can expect to hear more about this.
Yes.
Yippee. In case you just tuned in, you are listening to Outsources. I'm Glenda Russell, a guest host this evening on Outsources, and I'm talking with Jean Dubofsky, who is an appellate attorney, a former member of the Colorado Supreme Court, and who, for purposes of Outsources, famously litigated, was a lead attorney in the litigation against Amendment 2. Jean, let's talk about how you think people, just normal people, those of us in the streets, can best deal with the fact that we have a court that is very inclined toward making religious freedom even more fundamental than it is in the Constitution. What advice would you have for us?
Patience. I'm afraid the Supreme Court won't change in my lifetime. They're lifetime appointments. The legislature, Congress, could put some restrictions on the composition of the Supreme Court, but is highly unlikely to. And public opinion. The outcry with the affirmative action case, with the Dobbs case that overruled Roe versus Wade, and this particular decision, and the school finance case, and the environmental cases, the outrage over these decisions. People just have to keep coming to the streets because the court will respond to public outcry. There may be a couple of people on the court who won't, but the Chief Justice is very concerned about the plummeting reputation of the court right now. I think if you look at this decision, and you also look at the affirmative action decision that was written by Chief Justice Roberts, you'll see an effort to write the opinions more narrowly and without the demeaning language that the LGBTQ community used to face in court decisions before the Amendment 2 case that I was involved in. And the language that courts use in their opinions and that the court used in the Dobbs opinion really end up having a major impact on how people are treated in the court system, let alone in public. So I think it's very important that people both make their views known in a public way, a very public way. Don't just be lazy and refuse to go out to a demonstration that's about something you care about. And for pity's sakes, register to vote and vote. Because we can change the membership of Congress and we can have a president we want if we go out and vote. And it's true on the local level, too. We in Colorado will remain protected in lots of ways that people in other states won't be protected because people in Colorado have voted, the composition of people who live in the state have changed, and it's so important to keep that up.
So what you're saying is the U.S. Supreme Court, which for many years has been a location of last resort, may not be that for a while, certainly not in your lifetime or my lifetime, and it probably will be again in some other lifetime, we're hoping. But meanwhile, we're not rendered powerless by that.
That's right. It has empowered very conservative, I'd say far-right activism. And you can see that happening throughout the country.
Yes.
There are all kinds of things that are being said and published that would never have been said or published a decade ago. And it's sad because it really makes us look like a divided country. It makes us look like we're composed of people who do ugly things.
Yes.
And it encourages even more bad behavior. So I'm very discouraged about where our country is right now. But that doesn't mean we give up. We just take this as a signal that you cannot ever rest on your rights and you need to be involved, no matter how busy your personal life may be.
And there are many ways to do that. As you said, you named a lot of them. Marching in the streets is certainly one of them. Sending money, being a checkbook warrior is one of them. Thank you, Beyonce. Working in committee work, doing things with local organizations, paying attention to who's running for school board, pay attention to who's running for all kinds of local things. Because a lot of what we can do in the coming years is going to be done at the local and the regional and the state levels. That's just going to be the place where a lot is going to have to happen. I think the other thing is thinking about our own way of looking at this. You know, we have made incredible movement. You mentioned that even in this decision, LGBTQ people are talked about in a respectful way and how that was not always the case. And in fact, that was not the case until, as you pointed out, the Romer decision, where suddenly dignity is used, and it had never been used in decisions about gay people. What had been used is these people who did nefarious things that were really problematic. And we have to keep the court of public opinion going in the right direction. And that means being out when it is safe to be out. It means being in community because that will allow us to be out even more. It means asking our allies to step up for us and do what we think is needed at a political level. And there is no room for discouragement. There's simply not.
That's right. That's absolutely right. I've been dismayed that the public reaction about Dobbs has not been more obvious. I went to a demonstration shortly after the decision was issued, and I'll bet that 98% of the women at that demonstration were over the age of 65.
Yes.
They're the people, I'm the person, who remembers what things used to be like, and we're headed back there very quickly in lots of different areas.
Yes.
I mean, the U.S. Supreme Court, a couple of the justices really do want to return us to the 1950s or before. And it's important to understand that if you just sit and let that happen, like many Germans allowed Hitler to take over in Germany, that kind of thing can still happen. We're not protected from that, and certainly not protected at this very moment. Many people, because of concerns about the environment and concerns about what we say in elections and concerned about where we're going in terms of educational systems because teachers don't want to teach in this kind of environment. People want to go and hide because they're afraid that something bad might happen to them. And that certainly should not be something that we allow to happen.
Yeah. We have to take care of one another as we're not hiding. We have to really hold with one another and say, I'm with you, I'll stand with you. If you have encountered discrimination and you want to do something about it, I will go through the process with you. I will stand with you. I will help you if you need an attorney fees. I will do whatever it takes. I mean, that's the sort of business we all need to be about.
And we also need to be sure not to overreact,
mm-hmm.
to not describe this decision, the 303 creative case, as being broader than it really is. Or I've heard the news broadcast on the radio about people concerned about the affirmative action case,
mm-hmm.
that it is being described as much broader than it really is. And lo and behold, people, the general public, will take these decisions as being absolutely awful. And you can't do that. You have to understand when they're narrow and call out when they are unnecessarily described as being, oh, this is the end of the world, because mm-hmm. not all of these are. They may be a step in the wrong direction or a slippery slope or whatever you want to call it. But if we don't pay attention to the limits on these decisions, we're not going to try and do anything or see anything coming before it becomes a fact. We need to be proactive.
For the legal scholar and attorney and for the psychologist, the answer is the same. If you want to solve a problem, you have to correctly identify and describe the problem. If you get the wrong problem, you will get the wrong solution.
That's right. You can't be viewed as totally intolerant. You have to reach out to people because they won't listen to you if you're viewed as somebody who's just way off the spectrum in terms of your reaction to things.
I was thinking about that when you were talking about how polarized we seem as a country, and we are certainly in many ways. However, if you look at some of the data that are coming out around polarization, I'm not talking about the very fringes. I'm not talking about neo-Nazis. I'm not talking about people who are thinking about making bombs in their garages. I'm talking about most run-of-the-mill folks in this country. We actually share more values in common than we think we do. And when we have an opportunity to talk about that, we find out that that in fact is the case. But we can't start the conversation by talking about the things with which we disagree. That's why we, in dialogue conversations, we talk about things that many people agree about. I want my kids to be okay.
That's right. Well, I always have said that the decision in the Amendment 2 case was one that allowed people to learn about sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. So many people had no idea. It was just something to be afraid of. I think that the courts, in all of their decisions, have a role in educating us, and we need to be sure what it is that they're trying to say.
Yeah. when you think about all the various MEC briefs and documentation that gets submitted in a case, that is the stuff of educating the courts, but also the general public. One of the things you told me right after the court nullified Amendment 2, you said how the court talks about an issue spreads all to the other courts, and that ends up spreading to the American public in various ways. And I think we've really seen that. I think we're seeing that gives me hope for what's happening with trans rights right now, because I see that same thing. People are so mystified about transgender rights, transgender people. What does that mean? People are very attached to the gender binary. And as people get more educated, they will change on that, because it won't be a mystery, and they won't just have lies and stereotypes and misinformation to go on. That's part of why we have to keep talking. We have to keep sharing what the information actually says. And I happen to believe that real data is actually useful to people.
It helps win cases, that's for sure.
It does indeed. It helps us to stay in line with our own political and personal aspirations. The truth will set you free. What would you like to say to KGNU listeners about next steps?
When Amendment 2 passed in Colorado in 1992, it resulted in a devastating impact on the LGBTQ community. People were just afraid to ever show in any way what their sexual orientation was if it was not heterosexual. So what came of all of that and of the ultimate ruling in Romer versus Evans, which was the U.S. Supreme Court case that invalidated Amendment 2, said it was unconstitutional under the Equal Protection Clause, was a new commitment to changing things, making certain that never again did people not understand that homosexuality was not evil, and that they never again understood that many of their friends and neighbors could well be gay or lesbian. At that time, LGBTQ was not used as the identifying word, but it was really important to understand how big an impact anything that hated the gay community could have on people. I think the most significant achievement of the Amendment 2 decision was that it energized people, not just educated, but energized them.
It did indeed. LGBTQ people came out in droves instead of going back in the closet, which was, I think that is the intent of some of this legislation and some of these judicial efforts. People came out, allies came out and said, we don't want to be associated with people who do this to a part of the community. We won't have it. We ended up with the first real statewide organization that was devoted to LGBTQ rights in Colorado. Amazing things happened on campuses, amazing things happened in businesses, and I think we can see a new level of effort and activism and personal and community growth from this, and that is certainly the hope, and there's no reason we can't do that again. Lightning does strike twice. In fact, lightning strikes over and over, because this is often how social change happens.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU, and you've been listening to appellate attorney Gene Dabosky and psychologist Glenda Russell helping us understand 303 Creative versus Elena's case. You can hear Outsources every Monday evening on KGNU. If you missed any part of this broadcast, you could catch it on news.kgnu.org/outsources. I'm your host, Karen Rayforth.